Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the Basketball Fiends Podcast, a proud member of the Our Esquina Podcast Network. Our Esquina, where we strive to be the place where Latino athletes want their stories to be told. I am one of your hosts, Alex Aguilera, and with me, as always, is Houston's favorite son, or one of their favorite sons, Jesus Acevedo Jr. Jesus, how's it going, my man?
Hey, how's it going from down here in the Bayou City, which, you know, I know in last week's episode, I was singing our praises that Houston doesn't get much cold weather. It turns out on Monday, we may actually get snow. So there you go.
All right, man. Welcome to the club. Well, you know, in the Windy City, we always get snow. So, I mean, it's business as usual out here.
I welcome snow. We all welcome snow because that will probably be only the second or third time in my lifetime that we've had snow here in Houston. So it's very rare.
Wait, second or third?
Ever time.
Oh, yes. My God.
So, okay. But the thing is also, we're people down here in Houston, you know, we don't know what to do in this cold weather. It's going to be up to like 10 degrees. I'm seeing maybe possible 15 degrees. Like, we just don't know how to operate in those kind of conditions.
All right. I've never been to Houston, never been to Texas. So like, I don't know what your guys' climate is like, but that just blows my mind that you don't know how to conduct yourselves in cold weather. It's like, we're just used to it. I mean, it is what it is. Once this time of the year comes, we're like, all right. The snow trucks come out, the
put
salt
the chains
trucks
on the
that.
Tires, right?
Man, we wish we had chains, but it is what it is. But all right, enough about the weather. We have a basketball podcast to talk about.
Yes,
and
indeed.
First and foremost, we got the big ticket, Kevin Garnett, who recently in a New York Times article talked about 80s and 90s players. And how they wouldn't really be able to keep up in today's NBA. And Jesus, I know you're more of a 90s guy as opposed to me. You were kind of here on earth as and watched some of these guys play. What is your take on KG's remarks?
You know, KG is somebody that I love to listen to his analysis. He always, his analysis is always great. And he's someone that speaks candidly about the league and you know, his time in the league, you know, and how the league has progressed. And on this take, I think he's half right. You know, granted, he's played in the league, so who am I to disagree with KG? He's a big ticket, you know. But I do believe that some of the 80 and 90s players, specifically more 90s, because those more of my era of the NBA that I really grew up watching, I believe there's some 90s players that could easily play in today's league. Now, what I think KG was referencing was more so the style of play that the 90s era of the NBA compared to today's NBA, you know, and something he mentioned was all the rule changes that now benefit the offensive player, which is all facts. You know, he stated all facts. You know, the game right now is to appease the offensive player.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the main point he hit at was the hand-checking rule.
Yes.
Which people kind of forget. It's just one of those. It's a big rule that really kind of, if you really look at it and pay attention, it did kind of shake up the league. And I'm really glad he kind of brought it up because, like you said, the game sort of does more so cater to offensive players. And you look at the 90s, people talk about how it was rugged. You know, it was rough, players getting hurt. Like, you know, a normal foul then is like a flagrant in today's. And so, like you said, I'm right there with you where I say he's half right. There is some truth to it where I feel like, you know, guys in the 80s and 90s, I would say like the average Joes per se, aren't as maybe athletic or as skillful as the average Joe of the NBA today. I think that's where, you know, I see the truth in what he's talking about. And we got dogs in the background. We don't discriminate.
Got dogs in the background.
We don't discriminate on this podcast. We'll have whoever's.
We love all animals. Please be on our podcast.
Right. We love all living things on this show. But anyway, back to what I was saying is that, you know, when you talk about like the elites, like obviously the MJs, the Karl Malones, Patrick Ewing's, that type of deal, I think they'll be fine transitioning into today's NBA.
You know, and it's interesting. I think I want to hit up what you're on something right there. One quote that stood out to me is, he said, but if you have any creativity, any ambition, you can be a great offensive player in this league. Now, if we think about some of the 90s players that were on the wing or even some of the big men, you know, some that come to mind that I think could do well in this era of the NBA. Latrell Sprewell, Eddie Jones, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, which was the 90s version of Stephen Curry. You know, Mitch Richmond, Tim Hardaway, Vernon Maxwell. The list goes on and on. You know, these players were, they would easily, I think, adjust to this type of NBA because they were creative players, you know. And here's what they would have been the biggest beneficiary is some of the big men in the 90s, because there were some big men that could legit shoot the three ball, like 6'10", 7". You know, I'm talking about Sam Perkins, you know, Matt Buller, Arvydas Sabonis. You know, but the
Sabonis,
one player,
yeah.
Sabonis, hey, and his son is doing it well. But one player that I think would have been just unstoppable in this era of the NBA, and call me biased, but I think Hakeem Olajuwon would have just tore this league up.
No. I agree with you. I think Hakeem was ahead of his time, per se, as just a skillful big man. Like, I don't want to draw, like, just comparisons because they're not the same player. I mean, like, I sort of see, like, a Hakeem-esque in Joel Embiid.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You know, when comparing like today's NBA right here and right now, you know, I think Hakeem would kill, you know, in today's NBA.
Yeah, you know, because I mean, I think what KG was saying, you know, like I said, he chose his work carefully. He didn't say that the players in the 90s weren't talented enough. He just said that they couldn't play in this league. But I took that to mean that the game has changed so much. You know, there's more emphasis on the three-pointer now. You know, there were some teams in the 90s, some teams shot 10 three-pointers a night. Teams. Now, you have two players on one team shooting more than 10 threes a night, you know?
Yeah. So. It's, you know, yeah, I mean, but once again, that's the growth of the game. That's the evolution of the game. And like you said, I think KG, he's the big ticket. He knows what he's talking about. He's very knowledgeable of the game. So, once again, there is truth to what he's saying where, you know, he doesn't discredit guys from back in the day by any means. But at the same time, he is acknowledging that today's game, it's different. And, hey, like, these kids can play. Like, they're good. Like, you know, you can't throw any shade whatsoever because, hey, these kids can ball out. And some of them even more so than guys back in the day that we all revere and cherish so much.
Definitely. No, it's, you know, it's always one of those things, like, we wish we could see these players, the stars from the 90s play the stars from today. Like, you know, like, how would Dennis Rodman guard, you know, and Anthony Davis or vice versa. You know, like, it would have been great to see, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Man, Dennis Rodman, I was recently watching The Last Dance.
Oh, yeah.
And the way he, again, for like the third or fourth time, the way he critiqued rebounding.
Now, one team that definitely wishes it was the 90s again is the New York Knicks, because that was the last time they were relevant. As hard as that is to hear, New York fan, those are just the facts.
Sorry, Manny.
Sorry, Manny. Yeah, definitely Manny, who does our Bodega Baseball podcast for our Esquina. So if you're into baseball, definitely check it out. So the Knicks, well, they were recently in the news because they made a trade for a former Knickerbocker, Derrick Rose, which now reunites him with his old coach, Tom Thibodeau, which is the third time that they've played together. First was with the Chicago Bulls, which Alex can definitely speak about. Then with the Timberwolves, and now with the Knicks. And Alex, Derrick Rose says that him and Tom Thibodeau have a synergy with each other. What do you make of them getting, you know, reunited again, and how do you see it working out for the New York Knicks?
You know, I see it working out pretty well. I mean, they spent a lot of years, you know, with the Bulls. I mean, it's kind of an odd relationship. You see Thibodeau, he can be like this aggressive, intense coach. And I know most people with Derrick Rose, he's very this cool, laid back kind of guy, you know, a silent leader type of deal. But it works. I mean, these guys work well. They know each other. They kind of know their quirks and whatnot. Words are hard. but I do like this pairing up in New York this second time around. D-Rose being now more of a veteran. You have Emmanuel Quickley and Obi Toppin as rookies over there with the Knicks. You know, a lot of pick and roll. And, I mean, Derrick Rose is a great pick and roll guy. You saw that a lot with him under Thibodeau with the Bulls. And I kind of like sort of this role that he's playing as, you know, a second unit guy and also a mentor to some of these younger guys. And, I mean, he played well in his debut against Miami. He had, you know, 14 points and he only played like 20 minutes against Miami as well. So, I mean, just the system that Thibodeau wants to run out there in New York, I mean, Derrick Rose knows exactly what he wants, and, you know, he's played under him for so many years. So I think it's just going to mesh well perfectly in that sense. And, you know, him just taking up, you know, that leadership role, wanting to, you know, help these young guys out in New York, you know, I think it's a little match made in heaven.
Rose is definitely a better presence on a veteran presence on the floor. And, you know, reports state that he's already He's already come on and said that he wants to mentor some of the young players on the Knicks because the Knicks have a good young roster. You know, Emmanuel Quickley, I am surprised by him. I didn't know much about him coming into the NBA, but he's quietly had a nice himself a nice rookie season, almost up to 12 points per game. And he's had some
the three
highlight
well
moments, shooting the three well. So him pairing in the backcourt with Rose has been a nice pairing. Granted, it was only one game, but Tom Thibodeau said that he liked what he saw. Anyway, it's funny that now teams are more comfortable playing two, even three guards at a time, and more point guards in a way. You know, and it started with OKC whenever they had Chris Paul, and now you see that kind of going to different teams. But it's also a situation where you want your best players on the court. And, you know, that's what Derrick Rose does, you know, for whatever have you. Like he said, his synergy with Tom Thibodeau, they have been successful. You know, even after Rose's injuries, when he wasn't the player that he used to be, the player that some players used to fear having to guard because he would embarrass them. You know, he doesn't have that explosiveness, but he's still a solid player. He still can get you 20, you know, here and there. He'll get you 15, maybe nightly. But he knows what it takes to win. And I think, you know, it's good that he's going back to the Knicks to mentor some of these younger players. But also, I think he knows, hey, Thibodeau gets the best out of me. So let me just go back. Why not?
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. I think in Detroit, you know, just the situation itself. I mean, he was playing, you know, fine out there, but it didn't look like, you know, still doesn't look like the Pistons are really going anywhere. And, you know, there was sort of like a mutual agreement that, hey, you know, the best place for me isn't here. And once again, I like this pickup here in New York where he's at right now. I think he understands the role that he needs to play on this team now. Obviously, he's not the MVP, you know, roles of the Bulls, but he understands that he's a vet. He can still, you know, contribute to a team. Like you said, put up, you know, a nice little 15-20 off the bench. Doesn't have that explosiveness, but still can get to the rim, you know, can dish it out, you know, maybe 10 assists here or there. I think his defense has gotten a little bit better too.
Yep. I mean, the Knicks are currently ninth, so I think they can definitely get to the playing game. And behind Julius Randle, who's having himself a nice season, RJ Barrett, And now Rose and Emmanuel Quickley, I would not be surprised to see Knicks in the playing game. And, you know, Tom Thibodeau, as I've told you before, I love defense. And I first noticed Tom Thibodeau when he was with the Boston Celtics. He was part of the 2008 Celtics championship team. His defensive sets were one of the reasons why they were so good. But now here's the one thing that I also want to talk about. The odd man now is Austin Rivers.
Yeah.
And Tom Thibodeau called him a situational player going forward. Here's what I want to ask you. Do the Knicks trade Austin Rivers? Yes, I know they signed him in the offseason, but do they trade him? Because there is a market for point guards right now.
That's true. I think the Knicks should be open to that option. I mean, like you said, the market is definitely open out there for point guards. You know, maybe, I don't know, just spin whatever out there. Maybe go after a little Lonzo Ball type of deal if you want to, you know, roll with that scenario where, you know, you see how he develops in that Knicks system. It's a young team. He's still a young guy. See how that works. But at the same time, it doesn't hurt them if they keep Austin Rivers.
Oh, of course not. No,
Also,
you know, with Derrick Rose's injury history, yes, he hasn't had an injury in some time, but he does have that history. He's also your insurance, you know, player. And now from a new Knickerbocker, we're going to go to an old Knickerbocker. We'll talk about Carmelo Anthony, who just moved to the 12th on the all-time scoring list. And 12th is pretty high up there. He passed the big O, Oscar Robertson. And I actually want to name you the top 12, starting from number 12. So his 12 is Carmelo Anthony. 11 is Hakeem Olajuwon, which Carmelo should pass by this season unless he just gets injured and doesn't play for the rest of the season, right? He should be able to pass him. Then it's Elvin Hayes, Moses Malone, Shaquille O'Neal, Wilt Chamberlain, Dirk Nowitzki, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, Karl Malone, and finally Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Of those 12 players that I just mentioned, only two don't have a championship ring, Karl Malone and Carmelo Anthony. And, you know, for me, I asked myself, what does that say about the kind of player that Carmelo was in the league? Obviously, he's going to go down as one of the greatest scorers. You know, he's top 12 scoring. He's going to be top 11. Maybe he might crack the top 10 before his career is over. So he's going to be known as one of the greatest scorers ever. But aside from that, what else will we remember Carmelo Anthony for? You know, he didn't have much playoff success to speak of.
No, I mean, the most playoff success he had was that run he had with the Nuggets in 09, where they ended up facing off against the Lakers, who ended up winning it all that year. So, I mean, outside of that, there isn't much, you know, like you said, playoff success with Carmelo. I mean, you could look at, you know, him as an international player. I mean, he played very well, was on those Olympic teams. But, I mean, just... I don't know, just him and himself, as a player. I mean, he was just so good, just a lethal scorer, especially with Denver. I really loved Melo when he was a Denver Nugget. I mean, there was a scoring champion. Actually, I want to say that was with the Knicks, but nonetheless, I mean, this dude was a top 10, top 5 player, you know, in his prime. This guy was going at it with the LeBrons, you know, with the D-Waves, you know, with the Paul Pierces. So I think you can't, you know, regardless of the lack of success, you know, going into the postseason, I mean, this guy day in and day out was just one, not only one of the elite, you know, scorers in the league, but just one of the elite players in his prime.
You know, but I think with me, the question with Carmelo will always be, what if? What if he bought in to what the coaches were you know, saying or asking of him? Because sometimes, you know, when you gave the ball to Carmelo, you knew what he was going to do with it. He was going to get you points, right? But, you know, sometimes that was not what the offense required at that time. Or, you know, it's also the type, like, he always saw himself as the guy, even when he wasn't really the guy anymore. His skills and his age didn't prove to him that he's the guy still, but he still wanted to be the guy. And I think now, finally, he realized that, and now his time in Portland has been great. He's been able to extend his career because now he knows his role. I wonder what would have happened if he would have moved to that kind of six-man role earlier in his career. Not too early in his career, right? But by the time he saw that he couldn't carry a team or him, because... honestly, he never played with another star. You know, I think the closest was maybe Amari Stoudemire, but even then, I think with the Knicks, right. Amari was after two knee surgeries, if I'm not mistaken, so he wasn't the Amari of the Phoenix Suns. So he never played with that other star. You can say with Chauncey Billups when he was with Denver Nuggets, and you know they gave the LA Lakers a lot to handle. If I'm not mistaken, that went game 7 series. That was the closest, and he did have success in that playoff year, but besides that, I can't really think of any memory that I'm like, oh, you know, I remember that Carmelo play in the playoffs. And so it's always a what if with Carmelo.
Yeah, no, you're definitely right on that point. You kind of wonder if he maybe trusted his teammates a little bit more, was a little bit more unselfish on the offensive end. You kind of wonder, hey, maybe he could have, like in 2010, maybe could have taken that extra step with the Denver Nuggets. You know, maybe could have delegated a little bit in New York. But I mean, once again, it's a what if. There's so many players that you can mention and say what if,
right?
So but at the end of there's so many what ifs in this league and throughout so all many. sports. But at the end of the day, I mean,
we should do regardless an episode on what ifs, all the what ifs, you know, once we're in the offseason, we'll do a what if episode.
Right, like what if this, what if he hadn't gotten hurt, what if he
what if the
this
Rockets
shot?
Faced the Bulls in the finals? Oh my god.
Oh my god, so many what ifs. But regardless, sure. I mean,
yes,
Carmelo Anthony is that dude, well deserving of being on this list.
Yeah, I know. He's, like I say, you know, he can definitely speak to his Team USA success. But, you know, as far as how he will be seen in the league years from now, he'll just be known as a great scorer. And someone who didn't rely on the three-point shot a lot. He got a lot of his shots mid-range, post.
Yeah, man. Dude, I love his mid-range jumper, that, especially when he's in the post in that fadeaway.
Woo! Yeah. And, I mean, we can't remember Hoodie Mello. So, if he makes it to the Hall of Fame, would he get a bust? With the hoodie.
Oh, my. You know, that would be cool. That would
be awesome.
To see that.
I would love to see that.
I'd love to see that.
Well, who knows? Maybe the NBA would be more open to that. But something the NBA is definitely open on is having an All-Star game. Is something that both of us here at the Basketball Fiends do not agree with the NBA having an All-Star game. And they're in the middle of a pandemic. You know, we don't know how much longer this pandemic is going, you know, but we're still in it. And I know both of us do agree on this point that they shouldn't have it. And the reason we're making this our last topic is because we're also going to combine it with another topic, which is last Friday, the Nets were playing the I'm blanking out on the team who they were playing. But Kevin Durant had an issue where he had came into contact with somebody that had came into contact who had COVID. So that person tested negative. So KD was allowed to play. Then at halftime, they pulled him from the game and said he couldn't play anymore because the test had actually came back positive. But at that point, he had already played one half. So then now he can't play the rest of the half. So this turned into a whole fiasco. And I'm sure you saw some of the memes going around. And, you know, Kevin Durant was tweeting. And it's hard not to side on KD's side and on the player's side on this, you know, because on one hand you have all these COVID protocols to make sure that your players don't get infected and keep it safe, but yet you're gonna have an all-star game in the middle of a pandemic in a city that in a state that's pretty open. You know, you're gonna get the most highest profile stars of the NBA all in one spot. It just doesn't compute with me what this league is doing.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's like, obviously, if he comes in contact with someone that you suspect, you know, why even have him play or come off the bench at all by any means? It just doesn't make sense. And then you're like, oh, okay, it's good to go. And then the test comes back. It's like, wait, nah, you got to come out. And it's like, okay, he was there for whatever meetings they had to prepare for that game, warm up, shoot around on the bench.
He's like, sweating on them. I mean, it's right. You're touching these other players, your teammates, you know, slapping hands, you know. So it's
right. You have, you know, literally the whole Brooklyn Nets team could have been infected with COVID. You know, luckily that, you know, he didn't test positive. Thank goodness. But there was just so much unnecessary risk, you know, throwing him out there. If he comes in contact, then okay, like, he can't play. It sucks, but, you know, that's just the world that we live in the world of COVID. And yeah, they definitely just fumbled that whole little situation there. It's like, tell him if he can't play, then he can't play. It is what it is. That's the situation that we're living in. But just to say yes, no, it's like, make up your mind.
Yeah.
Like, there's a reason why these protocols are in place for a reason.
Exactly. You know, but and then, you know, bringing it, transition to the All-Star game, it just, like I'm saying, it just doesn't compute how you could just go ahead and do an All-Star game, which I have yet to see one player say, yes, I'm for the All-Star game. You know, most players are dumbfounded as to why the league is even doing it. But, you know, at the end of the day, and it's something we said when we talked about the All-Star game a couple of weeks ago, was money. It always comes back down to money. And Mark Stein from the New York Times had this great piece in his newsletter. He said, two estimates I was provided by industry insiders pegged the value of Turner, which is TNT, All-Star coverage at $30 million to $60 million, money that the NBA would have had to make up to Turner later if the game was not played. You know, so at the end of the day, it it's funny because the players know it. Kawhi Leonard said, it is what it is at this point. We all know why we're playing it. There's money on the line. Yeah. Simple as that.
Right. You just can't deny that fact. I mean, okay, they'll throw in the little, you know, charitable contributions that come from the game.
But it's definitely not 100%.
No, not 100% at all. Right. It's like, hey, 30, 60 million. It's like, hey, you know, let's try to get this game so that way we don't know all this money. You know, that's what it comes down to at this point. And I mean, it sucks that the NBA sort of initially, before the season started, kind of told players, hey, we're probably not going to have an All-Star game.
Right.
So the players coming into the season already having the mindset, okay, once this first half is up, we get a little, you know, 5 days, 6 days, a little week off just to kind of recuperate and then get ready for the second half.
Go see family, because some players haven't seen family. Toronto, for example, they're playing in Tampa Bay, right? So players haven't even seen their families who are still in Canada. They were going to use that time to go visit them. Now,
right, exactly. So it's just so unnecessary. And I like how some of these players said, LeBron said it was a slap in the face. De'Aaron Fox just straight up called it stupid.
Yeah.
Like, why do we need an All-Star game? It's like, just tell the players, hey, whoever, you know, would have made the All-Star team, give them that honor. Hey, they're an All-Star. They may have not played in the game, may not have the experience. But hey, you know, just do what the NFL did. Had like a little virtual Pro Bowl.
Yep.
Just have the little fan vote. Let people know like who would have been a Pro Bowler. And just leave it at that.
And, you know, it's also, and I think this season started on the wrong foot for the NBA because most players expected this NBA season to start in January, maybe even March, you know. And when they pushed it to December 22nd, again, it was money related because TNT, Turner, and ABC Disney, they wanted Disney wanted those Christmas games, which is what they always do annual. You know, they're on ESPN and they're on ABC, and TNT wanted that doubleheader on Tuesday, to opening night. So they won it. So they moved the league closer, which is on December 22nd, to appease the networks. You know, so just from that point already, this season was already the shortest off season I think that they've ever had. You know, some of the players that went deep into the playoffs, they didn't have as much rest. You know, not though that's one of the points that LeBron also brought up is that, man, we just finished the last season a couple right. a couple months ago. So
like not like just 70 days. It's like, hey, I just went on a championship run and already I got to suit up and get ready for another one already.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, so and that brought up a good point to me is, you know, something that they've said is that the NBA is the most player-friendly league, I guess, in terms of, you know, wheeling and dealings and trades and offseason moves. But does this All-Star game that's going to happen, because I think it's going to happen, does this rebut the statement that it is a players' league? Because clearly the players don't want to do it. But yeah. it's also something that the union did agree with. So they're also abide by what the union has already agreed for them. So maybe the NBA right. isn't as much of a players' league as we originally thought, or as we thought.
Yeah, no, I think you're right in that sense. I mean, more so than other leagues, I would say yes, but this alone just kind of shows, okay, maybe it's not as player-friendly as we thought. I do like that players have a little bit more say, have a bigger voice than they did in the past. And, I mean, I guess it's just one of those it-is-what-it-is scenarios. It's like, hey, we don't want to do it, but we kind of have to.
Yeah.
So it just, it, you know, it is what it is and it sucks. But yeah, it's unfortunate that, you know, so many players are vocal about it. And like literally no one wants to do this All-Star game. You've had George Hill, who's been very vocal about the season alone, not even just the All-Star game. He's like, hey, if we shouldn't play, then we shouldn't play. And that's that. So it's definitely disappointing and unfortunate on the NBA's part that, you know, once again, you know, it's all about the Benjamins and, you know, that's sort of the motivator to having this event in the first place.
Yeah. As we get to the last couple of minutes here of the show, just want to transition. Not that we have a last topic, but I just want to mention something. In last week's episode, we had our most improved player as Christian Wood. And then our second topic was the Rockets rise since James Harden trade. I don't know if it was a curse that we put out there, but that day that, you know, Christian Wood got hurt. So now yeah. he's out for like 3-4 weeks and the Rockets are on a slide having lost 3 in a row. So I don't know what that says, right? So I'm going to put that out there.
Hey, you know what? We called it how we saw it at that point in time.
At that point in time. There we go.
At that point in time, unfortunately, it hasn't aged very well since then. But you know what? I'm still rolling with Christian Wood. He's going to bounce back, and he's going to be just as good, if not better than ever, once he's healthy again.
Likewise. Well, that sucks, though. It's a tough blow. You know, and him being hurt has contributed to the Rockets, you know, losing 3 in a row. And also John Wall not playing back-to-back. They're still careful, you know, of the injury that he had. And also Victor Oladipo, so they kind of staggered them whenever they have back-to-back games. But those are all the NBA topics we have for today. We have a little time left. So, Alex, I want to get your thoughts. What are you expecting from this week's WandaVision episode?
Oh, my God, dude.
Last one's was all good. Right, I was so glad that I didn't see that spoiler. And I know you replied to me on Twitter. I would have been mad if I saw that spoiler.
I would have been heated. I had heard the little thing about a big cameo and spoiler warning. If you haven't seen WandaVision, well, sucks to be you, but Quicksilver Pietro from the X-Men movies played by Evan Peters made the cameo appearance at the end and I flipped out. I just yelled, oh my God. And Likewise. My dad heard me from the other room. He's like, oh my God. And I'm just like, dude, like, I can't tell you what happened. You just got to watch it. So the implications, man, are, I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm excited. When I saw who it was, you know, because me and my wife see it, she was like, okay. And I was like, no, my God. Like, this is,
like, I was like, baby, don't get it.
Don't get it. And then once I explained it, she's like, oh, okay. So, right, yeah, like, it makes sense. But it was, no, it was, it, like you said, I'm interested to see what the possibilities where this is going to lead to. And, you know, I've already heard different things that Doctor Strange is going to play a role with his second film, the multiverse. So it's interesting how Marvel is, you know, moving forward.
Now. Yeah, no, a lot of people ask, like, man, like, Endgame was just this culmination of these characters that we love so much after so many years. It's like, where do you go from there? And just this little show alone that where everyone was kind of like, okay, what is this about sitcoms and Marvel? Like, this isn't supposed to mesh up well. And now all of a sudden it's like, holy crap, are we going to see, you know, the X-Men?
Yeah.
And already they're bringing back people literally from that X-Men franchise from Fox over directly kind of right away, a little bit sooner than expected. So, you know, it's very exciting. I'm geeked out and ready to see, you know, just the show alone, you know, what's going to transpire and, you know, what it means for the rest of the MCU moving forward.
Definitely. Well, that is all the time we have to you for you guys on this Friday morning, or Friday whenever you listen, or Saturday or Sunday whenever you are listening to us. We don't know when you do listen to us, but you know, we hope you have a good weekend. Alex, do you have any plans for this weekend?
No. Stay warm.
Stay warm,
stay,
right?
Stay warm.
Yeah.
More than anything.
I'll probably go out and enjoy some of the weather because, like I said, Monday, Tuesday, we're going to get into the teens. So I don't even, like I said, I don't know how I'm going to function those days.
All right, well, you know what? You figure it out, bro. Because you were over here talking about 50, 60 degrees.
I know, like, I know.
Must be nice to be you right about now.
Right. All right. All right, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Come back weekly. Don't forget to subscribe. See ya.
Deuces.